Okay. Kristen and Adam, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Really, really pleased we've got both of you on the line. So perhaps just to kick off, if you guys could just spend a brief moment telling us a little about Wallage Hat, and then also how the two of you both came to becoming buyer's advocates.
Wallage Hat is a service for buyers, and we help buyers make good decisions in buying their property. It's very much a collaborative process between us and our clients in determining what their buying goals are, and then adopting the process and the strategy going forward to maximise their opportunities in buying the right home.
Mm-hmm.
I'll speak personally on my account, why I got into it and how I got into it. I'm a registered architect, and I had my own practice in Port Melbourne, specialising in renovations and new homes in inner Melbourne, and I did a lot of building inspections for Archie Centre, probably about 1,000. And under that process of inspecting homes for their structural integrity and the like, I guess I got into the... I was headhunted by a buyer advocacy company. And, you know, I saw some value in that service because it was very... buyers were very much underrepresented. And that's how I kind of got into buyer advocacy. That's my path.
Yeah, fantastic. And Kristen, I'm guessing your story would be somewhat similar in the sense that you've come from the world of... I know you've been a BA for some time, but before that, you also had experience as a sales agent. Would you agree with Adam in terms of buyers being underrepresented in the marketplace? Is that something that you would have seen in previous roles?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, funnily enough, I started out as a buyer's agent and then moved across to selling as a selling agent with a local company that just suited my requirements at the time, personal situation with younger children. And look, having had the opportunity to do both, it's very different. The buyers really are left to their own devices. I mean, the agents are there to get the best outcome for the vendor, and every decision they make is about representing their vendor to achieve the outcome that the vendor wants. And often the buyer, they can be pawns in the game and miss out on opportunities that they may have otherwise wanted to achieve just because they don't have their own representation. They're entering the negotiation and the market, you know, with something that the agents do every single week. And they're doing it once every, you know, maybe 3, 5, 7 years and thinking that they're going to be on an even playing field and get the outcome that they want. So
yeah,
having had that experience, it's extremely helpful. But I've moved across to the buyer side or back to the buyer side, I think for personal reasons that I actually enjoyed the process so much from helping buyers find the right home, but also because I think, you know, they deserve to have the same representation out there as well.
Yeah, fantastic. So let's just pick up on those two points. Maybe I'll throw the next one at you, Adam. If you could just kind of elaborate on your previous experiences and perhaps inform our audience at Long Property here around the kind of due diligence that buyers should consider when considering refurbishments and renovations, for example, on the properties that they're buying. What does that due diligence process look like, and where can buyers potentially get caught out?
Yeah, I think you need to look at a lot of things that can be changed and things that can't be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes a lot beyond the four fences of the property as well,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the greater area around it. So, I mean, a lot of things can obviously change. I'm a little bit blasé with that, and that's what a good architect will do. That will come with some solutions to suit the client's or the buyer's requirement. Living needs and family needs. You're really looking for good solid bones of the house, something with a pretty attractive facade that's going to support in capital growth terms, say a $1 million renovation out the back. I mean, the front needs to have that balance and to be able to support that in a capital growth sense. You need some character. You also need, a good orientation for property. We always talk about north facing rears, and for good reason. It allows natural access to sun into the backyard and also the private living spaces. And a third point, I suppose, is just about car access. More and more is becoming important with security and having cars off the street. And, you know, there needs to be opportunity for comfortable car parking as well as part of the block. So they're pretty simple terms. I mean, all the other due diligence a lot of people do, and they should do, that's checking contracts, calling the council, those property assessment in terms of price. I mean, that's all pretty, that's all acquirable. But yeah, it can go beyond that if they're looking to renovate and extend in terms of the due diligence.
And on that, just can you elaborate a little on the process dealing with councils? What are the councils like in the areas that you kind of concentrate in? Do you find that they're generally supportive of the types of inquiries that you make and the work that you're looking to do?
To be honest, it's very dynamic, and it has been the last few years with changing policies, and that's where Melbourne is growing at a rapidly increasing pace. And there's a lot of areas, like if you look at South Yarra, for example, that has moved considerably with a lot of big towers and the like. And there are a lot of promoted growth corridors, which buyers may or may not be aware of. And you really need to be up to speed with those regulations and possible planning processes in place. Because that what you're buying today could be very, very, or the street you're living in today, or wanting to live in today, could be very, very different in 10 years' time. Some streets are greatly protected and it's very difficult to get what you want. Others is pretty much a carte blanche and you can do, and actually the council are encouraging it, actually. So you need to be very mindful of those things.
Yeah, terrific. I guess I'm just going to take one step back. I mean, the general principles of investments that we concentrate on with long property are terrific, and a lot of our listeners would be well familiar with the types of investment strategies that we discuss and the audience will often pursue. I guess the longer term goal though for many property investors is ultimately to one day own their dream home and do so with a low level of owner-occupied or non-tax deductible debt. So that's kind of the bigger picture of where we're trying to get to. Typically, clients that or listeners that have progressed through that property journey and have reached a certain point where they are able to then go and purchase a new home for themselves to live in, they reach this point where they're probably less familiar with this process of buying a home to live in as opposed to say with using their calculators buying an investment property which is purchased with other considerations in mind. So I'd just be curious to hear both of your thoughts on how you think that differs, like the considerations that people should be making when it comes to buying their own home as opposed to buying an investment property with financial considerations in mind only.
I think, look, there's certainly things that you can look for in a property, fundamentals around location, distance to amenities, schools, those sorts of things, land size, orientation, that are still important when it comes to buying a property for personal use. But one of the other things that's equally as important, and sometimes people do think about it and sometimes they don't, is actually how the internal structure of the family functions, where the family works, distance to family, distance to schools, how the floor plan needs to work for the family. If those things aren't considered, you can buy a great home and think that it's going to be a good investment, but if you're not happy where you live, then that good investment might not actually be a great investment if you then realise that it's not going to function for you the way that you need it to from a lifestyle point of view, and then that doesn't become a good investment because you need to sell it perhaps earlier and those sorts of things. So that's the emotional outcomes and understanding exactly how your family works and what you're going to need in the various different stages of life can be very important to get that right.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Like the idea of the consideration of it being an investment, but more a personal investment for personal and lifestyle kind of reasons, as opposed to just a purely financial investment. What do you think, like, buyers today should be looking for in terms of like internals and floor plans? What are some of the key trends that you guys see emerging?
I think from a broader perspective, rather than the floor plans and those type of things, I think it all comes back to inner versus outer. I think if you buy, I'll give you an example, a lot of clients that we buy for live in the eastern suburbs and they've got children often and they're looking to find something that's closer inner, which would not suit them today for day-to-day living, of course, But say, for example, a double, you know, a two-bedroom little cottage in Fitzroy or Carlton or something like that. Mm-hmm. Why? Because that will appeal to a wide buyer group, but it will also probably serve their purposes with children going to university, perhaps, and or themselves downsizing. Because a lot of people we're finding are wanting to be closer into the city and enjoy all that Melbourne offers rather than be further out. So, I mean, we can talk about ease of floor plan, particularly with downsizes. It's always about a single level, no steps, secure off parking. Although car parking as you get older is probably not as important, to be honest. Melbourne does have, we're finding, because, you know, Melbourne does have good public transport systems. And obviously the closer you are into Melbourne, the better. Because it's very much a, you know, Melbourne is the centre and everything kind of revolves around that.
I think that type of asset that you're referring to would have even more broader appeal in regards to perhaps, you know, young professional. So you're just saying, Adam, that that's basically a protection mechanism, is it? In the sense that if you ever need to sell, there's going to be more interest.
It's certainly safer, Dan, in that, you know, you'll appeal to a wider, broader market. And obviously the fundamentals of inner versus outer are pretty much undisputed in a lot of ways. Yeah. So as time is becoming more and more important to people, so is travel, and so is proximity to things. And those things are universities, schools, good shopping, you know, those type of things, and public transport, and obviously the CBD, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. So that's obviously location. How about in terms of the internals, Kristen? Like, I mean, you alluded to earlier just the needs of family and living and lifestyle and how that works. Are there kind of you know, major considerations when someone enters a property that, you know, if they see a particular kind of layout or floor plan should raise you know, red flags or they should be alerted to that you know, what they're seeing is perhaps not going to be suitable for what the typical family there's included is going to need in a great space and home?
Yeah, I think sometimes people can fall into the trap of buying something that they think is going to work for a long period of time, but dynamics of life and family life change very quickly. So having a property that's got flexibility to grow with you is probably one of the most important things. Now, that can be just, you know, an example, even just moving positions and rooms within the house, you know, having different layouts of bedrooms so that when the kids are small you can be near them, but when they're older you can be away, being able to have different zones to shut off if you're entertaining, being able to see outdoors, being able to extend up or out if necessary without impacting on light or, you know, heat and those sorts of things can equally be as important. So it's all around flexibilities for properties. And keeping in mind that what you might need now could be very different to what you might need in 5 years and 10 years' time.
I think the more rigid you are, as Kristen suggested there, in terms of a lot of people, if you're going into something with a very rigid plan and something very specific, that can then restrict you down the track with options. So I think it always comes back to trying to find a property that has the best flexibility. Yeah. To be able to change as you may need to change down the track. I'm not sure if that answers your question exactly, but
yeah,
it's really hard.
You're talking about, like, you need a fairly you know, straightforward floor plan that you know, like a good shell. As soon as you've got strange angles and you know, interesting kind of land plots, all of that becomes a lot more difficult. Is that right?
The houses that are often the hardest to sell are often the ones that are architect designed, in that they're specific to a client's brief and very specific to a client's needs and tastes. And that's great if you're the client and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you were to sell it down the track, I mean, you're relying on other buyers to have similar needs and tastes to yours. Mm-hmm. So I guess what we're trying to say is, if it comes back to the old saying, doesn't it? Buying the worst house in the best street is often a better way to go, perhaps for growth and flexibility and changing things going forward, because you've got that opportunity. Whereas if you're buying something that's already specific, it becomes harder to do that. So, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with 70s-style architecture and all the rest of it. As long as the land content is good, you know, and you've got the fundamentals of good orientation, good land within the block, or certainly nothing that's very, very small compared to everything else, then that will always afford you opportunities, and that's probably the right way to go.
Yeah, fantastic. So finish up, let's talk a little bit about the Melbourne market now and how that's faring for you and what kind of options there are now for people that are interested in these markets specifically.
Well, I think if we look at the market in Melbourne specifically, it's a fairly strong market. There's a lot of people that are wanting to live in Melbourne. People are wanting to upgrade, people who are buying for the first time, expats coming back, and then overseas people that are moving either for work or lifestyle. So the demand is high, particularly for family properties or homes that are within good distance to the city or amenities. Stock levels in general have been quite tight this year, and you know, certainly for the last few months, it's been fair to say that they might have been down 20 or 30% compared to the same time last year. And there's multiple bidders. So, I mean, if you're a seller at the moment, it's a good market because there's more buyers out there than probably homes for choice. Now, that's not for every type of property. There are some properties in Melbourne where there can be an oversupply or different areas that people don't have the same need to be living in, so they're not seeing it. But in the market that we focus in, the market's pretty strong.
Yeah, right.
So in terms
specifically, sorry to cut you off there, that's like southeastern suburbs of Melbourne in a ring and south of the city?
Yeah, inner Melbourne, eastern, south, southern, suburbs of Melbourne, that's right. Now, there's some things when you're looking that need to remain inflexible, because if you're flexible around them, then you're not going to have that happy lifestyle that we were talking about earlier. But there's certainly opportunities in the marketplace to achieve outcomes that you want to achieve. Just keeping an open mind and being able to identify opportunities, you know, being able to understand what the agents are saying, working out whether a property is actually going to meet the needs or not, or whether small changes could help with that. Reading the market, understanding your buyer competition, all of those things are important to help achieve it. But you can, I mean, we're buying homes for clients where they want to live and achieving outcomes that they want to achieve in a pretty hot market.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. So given that the market, like you say, is quite hot, particularly in these areas, Are you finding that there are any opportunities to acquire properties off market, or do you find that because of the strength of the market, all vendors are preferring to take their properties to auction?
I think there's a mix with that, because the market this year, the calendar hasn't been kind to vendors in terms of public holidays and school holidays. The layout has meant it's been very difficult for buyers to get a run of weeks in a row for a campaign to work. So where the opportunities are there, vendors would love to take it to auction, and agents would love to take the property to auction because they think that they can build a healthy competition. But there's also buyers at the moment who understand the market's hot, and you know, they're comfortable to buy without competition if they feel the property ticks their needs. Now, in those situations, you know, if you're a buyer and you've got a very comfortable understanding of price in those situations, then there can be very good offers. You know, sometimes vendors in those situations can also be well above market. But look, research again is the key in everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just to ensure that the clients aren't overpaying, research is key. What kind of research do you guys focus on to ensure that the clients are buying well?
Look, there are off markets out there, and we're buying them. We're not the only ones, by the way, but please, that's happening. Look, in terms of research, look, it's all just about managing expectations of the client, and then just formulating a plan, and then making sure that at the end of the day, that you know, they're a realistic chance of achieving what they want to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So on the off markets, what do you find typically works best? I've heard like different schools of thought here. There are some buyers that like putting in offers pre-auction towards the beginning of the campaign process, perhaps say after the first inspection, whereas others like leaving offers right to the end once at least I guess agents can go back to the vendors saying that we've got all the market feedback and offer X seems to represent good value, and they can kind of go with that bird in the hand type strategy. Do you guys have any kind of thoughts as to how to approach that off market acquisition in the most favourable way to the buyer?
Sure. I mean, it's all to do with agent relationships at the end of the day. There's some agents that we know because we've done deals with in the past are good at off-market transactions, and there's others that perhaps aren't. So I guess it's understanding, and the little things that they say as well, understanding that dialogue, understanding their history, understanding their knowledge of that market.
Probably the motivation as well, I suppose, of as to why a particular vendor is selling.
Yeah, and look, a lot of it's not about money, by the way, with off markets. It's about a result. Mm-hmm. And the results, I mean, for the vendor, it could all just be about timing. But, you know, they want to get this done and dusted quite quickly because they're going on holiday soon, or, you know, they actually haven't got the energy or time or have the inclination to present the property.
Yeah. Or they've bought somewhere else, or
there's all those
divorce
things,
or death, and or, yeah.
It's an understanding of what the vendor really wants. And sometimes it could be if you see the house one day, you might want to offer on it at the end of the day. It's very much the quick and the dead sometimes with off markets. But all we try and tell our clients is we'll at least put you in the position to make that decision. It's up to you whether you want to make it or not. But obviously, the longer time goes on often with off markets, you know, the greater your chances. More and more people become aware of the property or involved into the property, then, you know, your chances of buying it can be diminished as well.
Just lastly then, to end, can you perhaps just recount a particular story or maybe a recent example of buying something off market where your client has felt that you've achieved a terrific result and that kind of process and strategy has worked well for you guys?
So the most recent one Chris and I were involved in was basically a client was looking in an area of Boroondara, which is quite hot at the moment, like most of them, family home. The most important thing for them was position. And look, they looked at an auction. They were looking at a property. They came to us for that reason because they wanted our value thoughts. We said to them, look, much over this level, we think you probably, it's not going to suit you because the property's a bit small and it's a bit restrictive. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we attended that auction. We ended up buying the property. But we were able to show them within about a week two off-market properties that were very good value, we felt, and suited their needs better. And within a week of that other auction, they ended up buying an off-market property. Now, it did require a fair bit of work, but with my architectural skills, we were able to kind of provide a vision very quickly and put some numbers next to that very quickly so that they could understand what they were getting themselves in for and provided a game plan going forward. And I think there were a few results consequently after them buying that showed that was a very, very... very good purchase.
Excellent. And how did they come about, Adam? Obviously, you've got the relationship with
the
vendors.
With the agents.
With the agents, of course.
Dan, calling the specific agents that we thought may have that property.
Yep.
And them obviously understanding with us as well, because we've got years and years of doing this, not wasting their time either. Yes, we've got a client. No, we don't. That's how it all kind of came about.
Yeah, fantastic. Great, guys. Well, that's been really, really informative. Where best can our audience learn more about Wallich Hat and find out some further details in terms of what you guys can offer?
Probably our website, www.wallichhat.com.au, which is WOLEDGEHAWT. And you can always join our database and receive our weekly emails and updates. We'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to have the chat and have the opportunity to speak to your audience. Very kind of you to do that for us, and hopefully we can help some of them in the future.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much again for your time, guys. Really appreciate it. And have a lovely afternoon.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks,
okay.
Dan.
Cheers. Bye.